is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Next on News for the Soul, Love and Healing Solutions with Beth and Gil. Gil and Beth show people how spiritual truth can help you heal from emotional pain resulting in personal transformation. Gil is a highly skilled pastor who raised up two megachurches in Colorado, and Beth is known around the world as a top-flight psychologist, trauma expert, and gifted healer. Together, they inform and inspire people to recycle and repurpose their lives through the currency of a healed life from breakups and divorce, addiction, failure, loss, and change. Tune in for regular live broadcasts and the opportunity to dive deeper in one-on-one transformation. Please welcome back Beth and Gil to News for the Soul.
Hey, guys. Welcome back.
Hey. Every time we hear that introduction, I always feel like we should have an English accent.
Oh.
What do you think? I mean, that would make us, it would make us seem a lot
more interesting
and wiser. Hello. Cheerio.
It's funny because some of our intros are in English accents.
They are. Is there a way you can work on that for us?
There is totally a way I could work on that for you.
Oh, boy.
Well, it's good to hear your voice. We've missed you.
Yeah. How are you doing, and how's it going, and what's new?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Man.
How much time do
yeah.
you have, Nicole?
Yeah.
Not enough.
Yeah. We're hanging in there. It's been a New Year starting out with a bang, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Just good challenges, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, I think that's the way of how it goes. So it's like we had some illness on this end, and we're taking care of Beth's mom, and we're kind of moving her out here, and I think that's a good thing. And so, you know, it's a 3,000-mile move that we need to, that we're helping with. And amongst, you know, gosh, hundreds of people a month that check in and say, hey, help us, you know, so.
I think it's funny because, you know, people, they always see the new year as, you know, it's going to be so much better and it's going to be different, you know, and like everybody for about 24 hours has some belief that there will be no challenges this year.
Yeah. Hey, 24 hours of belief.
You know, and then the hits just start coming. It's like, it's so.
Yeah, people are like, I'm really excited. I'm turning the page on this awful year. And now,
yep.
You know,
yep.
You know, it's yeah. So it's
yeah,
good to be a realist, I guess, and then help
yeah.
people through that.
Yep. Help people and ourselves. That's right.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks for asking. And it's good to hear your voice. And I think, you know, it's good to be back in circulation too, and part of that is being right here with you and your listeners.
You know, I think we've said it on every show, on every hour for the last few years at least. Every time, the energy seems to be amped up from the show before. So, I think that it's you know, it just everything's raising its game.
Right on. Well, you know, we are in this series called Personality Traits Gone Wild, and you know, and this one, the one that we're in the middle of, has just been really interesting because I don't know how it works for you or your listeners, but for us, anytime we are making strides in an area, and I think it's a big deal for people to be able to navigate life well. That's why that Hebrew term hakma means skill in living. It's an ancient term that actually has been a part of every generation, and that is that, you know, if you get a life, you have to develop skills to walk it through. And, you know, you don't...
What does the word mean again?
Hakma means skill in living, living skillfully.
Does our culture have that?
No, right. Our culture does.
You're saying every generation. I'm sitting here thinking, no. Are you sure?
No, I'm saying every generation is challenged to make sure that, you know, that you have an opportunity to live with skill.
Yeah.
And,
lots of opportunity.
And if you don't, then you find yourself in a place. And what's really tough about this is that if you have a family, a generational scenario going on where the skill has not been there, then the challenge is greater for you.
Oh, yeah.
And and I know, for me personally, it was like, look, I'm going to either do this well and dive in and, you know, or I'm just going to be swept out in the flood of cultural ideas that are headed in directions that aren't really, you know, healthy. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a challenge, you know, it's like anything else in that way. And so, you know, Beth and I jump in and we say, okay, let's do this and do it well. So this one, this personality trait on judgment it's just been interesting because the more we have looked into this and prayed about this and the more that, you know, anytime we step into something that we want more of, then, you know, God will say, here's some practice for you.
Oh, yeah. And then you start seeing it everywhere.
Yeah.
Just like, don't notice the dark blue cars. And all of a sudden,
there they are.
That's all you see.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is something that we've been looking at. I know last time we were with you, I think it was about a month ago, live anyway, we looked at this first half of this judger piece and judgment, and we said this, and this is, you know, judgment is really a form of love. The problem of judgment is it's the love of self. So it's a love that's not outward. Judgment says that I am God, and the way life should go is the way I think it should, and the people and circumstances and situations and experiences in my life, I have scripted out, and it must go the way I have written the play. And if it doesn't go that way, then I have every right to stand up on my throne, you know, on my ivory tower, and, I mean, can I say this term on the show? And bitch, it's basically where I sit. I can stand up here then and complain.
Yeah.
I can stand up here and more than that, I can grab a neighbor or someone that I know and gossip about these people that are not going along with my script. And I'm okay doing that. I'm justified doing that. You know, I love me and how I want things to go. And when those things don't happen, then man, it's throne time and I get to be on that. And fire away. And so even the quiet ones around judgment then will seethe inside. And, you know, they get this, you know, fire burning in them and these embers get fire, you know, going to where it's like, you know, life is not the way it should be. And I am beyond rageful about it. No one would say that. They wouldn't say I have rage. That's not a word we like to hear. But there is a smoldering anger and a smoldering sense of, I deserve better than this.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, my client base is largely people with chronic illness or major illness or you know, whatever pain is in life. But as you were talking about that, you know, justification, like I'm justified in being this angry. I'm justified in being this rageful. Yeah, you fast forward that about 2 years and you've got major health problems for a lot of people. When you do that.
Right.
So you can be as justified as you want and it's going to make you sick. And I heard a perfect example of this today that I'm going to share. And she's not my client, so I feel okay saying this because I don't use names anyway, but a client that I just heard about with liver cancer. And she said to the healer, well, what do you mean I have to get rid of this rage towards my mom in order to heal from stage 4 liver cancer? I'm not interested. Okay.
Yeah. Bye.
So,
yeah.
Okay, talk about the perfect example of an extreme of justification. I am justified in this rage towards my mom. Are you kidding me? You think I'm going to let this go because I have stage 4 liver cancer? I mean, that's shocking.
So
that's
there was
a
no
shocking statement.
So there was no tie for this person. There was
She is in effect right
saying,
there making she's making a choice.
She's saying
if I have to forgive my mom in order to survive this cancer?
Yes or no.
Bye. Okay. And she hung up. It was over. I'm just saying that is the extreme example of justification for my rage.
Yep.
And I have seen that with many clients over the years, particularly with cancer, because cancer is always driven by rage and unforgiveness. And a lot of times really nice people will have cancer because they hold in rage because they're not allowed to show it. So then you got that. But anyway, I just wanted to share that because that's right. I am justified. Well, okay. We'll see how that goes for you. Because it won't go well.
And the opposite of that, in my side of this and dealing with my own rage back in the day, was I have to surrender and accept. Surrender and acceptance were big. And it was saying, okay, I'm going to say life is, right? This is where the skill part. Most people say, man, if I hold on to this rage, then I win. Then I win. And life feels like.
Yeah, what is it
like
that you win?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. A pissing match.
Yeah, but seriously, I'm going to hold on to this. I don't care if my liver cancer blows up in a million. I'll go to stage 12. I don't care. I'm going. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna die, you know, giving the finger to my mom.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And I'm like, wow, you could have had 20 more years of joyful living. You could have had 20 more years of impact. You have 20 more years of meaning, 20 more years of loving your children, 20 more years. I mean, I'm just saying that I will give all that up to flip off somebody. And say later. I mean, that's the thing, Nicole, as I think that, you know, people will say, yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to hold on to that. And that would be, I think the ancients would say, right? That would be non-skillful living. That would be buying into culture. That would be going with your flow. That would be you feeling.
Anti-hakma.
Yeah, anti-hakma. I'm going to do this. Right? And I'm serious, though. You have people who literally do that. I think it's spot on. And I think the other side of that is saying, okay, I will surrender, which is a really tough word. I will lay down my weapon. I will lay it down. And I will accept this is what it is. This is the script that is playing out. I will accept that. And then I, on my side, will adjust to what needs to happen for me to live a fulfilling life.
Yes, and looking at why did you believe you needed that weapon in the first place? Because in your life right now, you may not. But it's subconscious, it's automatic programming that you have to have that weapon. Like for you, with the family you were raised in, when I met you, we talked about you had a weapons closet that was full, metaphorically.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't need these anymore. I'm not living with my dad anymore, you know. So, yeah, I mean, that's a big part of it, too. And people out of pain, you know, they do the justification out of pain, but it's like it's silly. It's anti-hakma in terms of a choice.
You know, I really – Nicole, something happened this week, and I think it was really – been really good, actually, in this way. And we're going to give your listeners a chance to write some things down here very soon as we kind of dial this up. But – you know, family comes in, right? A lot of times I call it the glorious experience of family gatherings over the holidays. It's a glorious experience. And so we got to get ready. We go, here we go. And
yes, when I walked my mother to her bedroom and told her to go to bed on Christmas Eve. Yes, like that. That kind of glorious.
The glorious family gathering. And
go to bed.
Yeah, Beth and I have. We have our own. I'm sure your listeners do too, right? It's like, hey, everybody's getting together, and they're probably going, wow.
It's a joke, right?
Yeah, it's like, whoa, this could go, wow, you know, crazy Uncle Eddie might just come out of the closet there. We're going to be in trouble. But it was interesting I had some family coming in, and I call them my good side of my family. And they live here in Florida, and we're in Sarasota, and they're up in Wesley Chapel, I guess another couple is coming from Illinois. Yeah. And so I had a moment, and it was really interesting because I started putting on, like, armor. And this is so crazy. So
automatic.
It's so automatic. And so I'm talking to Beth, and she goes, man, she goes, you sound, right? You're just like your brother, right? You said,
well, your voice, your everything changed about you.
Yeah.
Right in front of me.
Yeah.
Your voice changed.
Yeah.
Like you became, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I did,
I'm like,
man.
Who is
yeah.
that?
You're right, right.
Like, who is that dude? I said, Josie, I'm like, your voice is changing. Your eyes almost change color.
Yeah, they do. And the reason is because there's so much trauma in my past around this stuff.
That's right.
And so
gotta get ready.
It's natural. It's so natural to anti-hakma this, right? It's so natural to say I'm just gonna get my armor on, and I'm gonna load up, and it's gonna be an Avengers deal here, you know. And the thing was, I'll be honest, it was a little embarrassing because I knew I could tell even I was like, ugh, like, you know, and I don't want anybody else to see this. I, you know, I'm like, well, this is just what I do, you know. And Beth was like, hey, dang, that's just, you know, you were like.
Yeah, what I said was,
yeah,
and I will not repeat the name, but I said, this certain person is not coming.
Okay.
This certain person is not coming.
Yeah. And because so anyway, all I have to say is that this is really important, I think, in this being in the now and being in this kind of place of saying, put down your weapon, you know, and knowing when it's time to be able to do that. And I think that it's so important. I could have ruined not just other people's experience, and so I could have ruined my own. And I think that's the bottom line, where I actually, right. And I had a, because Beth was kind enough to put her arm around me and go, dude, like, we're going to have a blast. Like, what do you, you know, time out here. And it was so great because just in that moment, and I mean this, I'm going to say this to your listeners, like, big time, okay? This whole idea of being like, oh, I'm a positive thinker, it's just BS. You're going to have to live in the now. And to live in the now means you need to make decisions in the now to say, that's right. I need to realize that I'm not time zoned. These people aren't coming. I have done a really good job of setting boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
This is a wonderful time that's going to be happening. And you know what? I deserve a great time here. And enough of, you know, I'm willing to just let other experiences and people and expectations put me into a really negative drift. You know, had I not had a great time on that, I could have easily gone, well, I didn't have a very good time because these people and blah, 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 right? That's such BS at this point. You know, I have the ability to make a choice to say, you know what, I'm going to choose to surrender and accept in this rather than hold on to some past awesome trauma garbage that I don't need to do anymore. And I think it's, anyway, I just want to say, I think it's important, two things on that. One, it's important to know that you can do it. And two, and I mean this, I hope you have a person in your life that loves you enough to say, hey, I love you so much. Please come into the reality of the situation. Please allow yourself to come back. Come back to me. You know, come back to me. I love you. Come back. You know, I want you to experience something really great and not hold on to that. So I just think, man, those two things are huge for me in that. And I think for your listeners, too. Anyway, Beth, you wanted to jump in.
Well, one of the things that I tell my clients that I work with, and I say this often because I believe it really helps, is if you feel like, and we all can know, we can all watch ourselves. That's what we, as human beings, right? We call it an objective observer, which is part of Hakma, right? We all have the ability to watch ourselves and observe ourselves and how we're feeling, observe our behavior, observe our bodies, observe ourselves. And when one observes that their emotions, how they're feeling, their level of tenseness, intensity, anxiety does not match what's happening around them in that moment, okay, then you know you are living from another time zone from the past. Okay. So, for example, right, if we were in the kitchen and you had some of your family members coming, you know, the good side coming, And right, you noticed, right, you were starting to get really amped up, really amped up. And so if, when you look around.
And Nicole, me getting really amped up.
Oh, he's big. He's 6'6". He's big.
So embarrassing. But
no, it's not embarrassing. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. You were doing great. So, no, but if you think about it, right, so that's a perfect example.
Yeah.
You're getting amped up. You're getting maybe even warm, maybe a little sweaty. Your voice is changing, getting louder. You're putting on this kind of armor and this weaponry. Like, I could just tell all that was happening. But for the person, if you're alone, you can do this too. You can feel it. It's like, okay. And you knew, like you said, you could feel yourself doing it. So, like, when you feel that and then you look around and go, wait a minute. Okay. Nobody is here. It's really quiet. We've got some candles going. My favorite auntie is coming. And my two favorite girl cousins. Okay. Then you can see the reality doesn't match how you are feeling, behaving, responding. And when you can see that, you automatically know you have been taken back to a time zone of trauma from your mm-hmm. life. Okay. So you know that, and then you can say, oh, wow, okay, if I just look at myself, this does not match what my surroundings are right now. And then you catch yourself, and then you can release it. Like, okay, and a lot of times, I mean, I've been doing intuitive healing work for so long that even, like, for myself, I can feel. It's like, oh, there I went. I just went to a place mm-hmm. where I felt 10 years ago. I know exactly where I just went. I am not here. And sometimes we know those things and sometimes we don't, but we at least can tell I'm not here right now. I just went to another place. My body is reacting as if I am living from a different spot, you know, from when my dad was there or whatever it was for the person. So it's just an exercise that really helps, you know, how I feel and act. Is that matching what's really here? If not, you're somewhere else. Bring yourself back here now.
And I think everyone does it, you know, like this pressure to be a
yeah.
positive spiritual leader. I mean, nobody's in
yeah.
that hat 24 hours a day, and it makes you more real and authentic and your teachings more poignant when,
yeah.
you know, you're able to admit your moments, right?
That's right.
Absolutely.
That's absolutely right. Yes. Yes.
Well,
we all have those moments.
Yeah.
Everyone does. And then if you can catch yourself sooner, then there's less pain involved. Sometimes, you know, we don't catch ourselves until after the interaction and wonder why we felt so bad. And that's okay, too. You can see it, you know. And one of the things that another thing I love to share with people is, okay, so if you noticed yourself and you were time zoned, you were living from somewhere in the past with automatic programming that isn't so stellar, okay, well, that's okay. You just noticed it. Even if it's after the interaction, don't condemn yourself because nothing good will ever come of that. Don't condemn yourself. Just go, oh, aha, you know, there it is. There's that old programming again, and, you know, it caused me not to have some great time tonight, but I'm not going to condemn myself. I'm just going to notice it. Say, okay, well, good, you know, better luck next time. I saw it, which helps me for the next time.
Yeah, I think that's really important that we're gentle, right, with ourselves in that, because if we're not, and then you live under that condemnation piece, then, you know, that's going to spiral you the wrong way. And again, that comes back to, you know, again, skill in living is, hey, when I notice this stuff, it's just being gentle, you know. I really think, too, like, celebrate that, you know, the fact that you're getting to the place where you go, oh, there I am, you know. I think that's a really great thing. Of saying, oh, yeah, that's that dude, you know, that's that kid back when he was 16 that had to fend for himself in really, really difficult places of abuse and, you know, verbally, physically, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's that kid. He's getting fired up. And you know what? That's okay. There he is. And that kid's a great kid. He actually survived with that. And now he can just kind of say, hey, no, I'm good. You know, I'm really good. So all I have to say is, Nicole, we had a great time. And, you know, seriously, that's the thing. I had a great time. So did you. Everybody was in a great spot. And I think that, you know, we were able to set it, we call it a container, right? We have this, like, safe container, this really, every time we get together, we call this the House of Joy. Best name is, you know, Beit, it's house. Mine's Hila in ancient Greek. It means house of joy, right? So we both have said, let's create this kind of transformational environment for people that are here. And to do that, I love, and I've said this a million times over, when you say I'm going to commit to that, then the challenges will come, and that's okay. It's like, okay, I need to deal with that. And I love the fact that we have kind of put our marker down on that one. It's like Beit Hila, which is our names together, House of Joy, we are in on creating that. And I know on my end what could, in a sense, sabotage that would be not being in the now and aware and then being able to surrender and accept in that. And that's decisions that I make. And I think what we wanted to say to your listeners today was judgment, this thing that can take you really off your game, right, and can place you in really dark spots. You can make decisions in the now that will change all that. It will change all that. And so what's been happening, I think, with Beth and myself is we've had opportunities to live in that anti-hakma place of I'm going to just let how the culture does these things dictate how we do these things. And if that's the case, then we're going to be sitting on top of our thrones, throwing judgment in ways that say, I am justified that you all get your act together to make this work out, rather than, hey, I can make decisions on this. So we wanted to throw out a couple of things on this that we think will help. And then we want your, you know, if you're listening in and you want to kind of come along with us on this, then we're going to ask you to write some things down as we go so that you're able to become more kind of in the now for yourself and more aware. So this, the two ways of creating a path away from what bitter judgment can do to you, the path really of peace, I think the path of joy is, you know, the way of decision and the way of love. And this is what we, you know, we talk about and it's what we preach, I think, in a way, in a good way that we're, and we strive for. Yeah. Yeah. We say, okay, we're striving. We're going to be gentle with ourselves as we go. And so this way of decision is, this is where I'm going to ultimately choose when I get triggered to judge someone, I'm going to make different decisions. I'm going to not go with the cultural flow on this. I'm not going to move onto a throne and say, my script is the way this needs to go. You've inconvenienced me. You've totally made my day awful, and I'm going to beat you up for it, and I'm fully justified in doing that. I'm going to move away from that, right? And I'm going to make two decisions that are really, really crucial in this. Really crucial. And Beth has some really good stuff around this too, right, about why we do this and how we can be gentle with ourselves. But the first one goes like this. I will make the decision that I can't control another individual. I cannot control them, right? This is kind of the law of expectation. I will make the decision that I can't control another individual. I can only control myself, okay? That's my decision. I make it in the now. Instead of saying for my day, life, this experience I'm in, whatever, to go inconvenience and perfect, because that's what I need to have. I wake up every morning, I go, boy, I know exactly how I want my day to go. I've got it all planned out. Here it is, you know. Everybody's going to play along. Everybody's got a part. This is a play, right? I have a play. Yeah, I'm in theater here. I am not only the director, I'm the writer. I did the screenplay. This is the way it's going to go. And it's going to be amazing, especially if all these people play their parts that I have written down right here, right? When that happens, right? So Amy's perfect. This person needs to be blank, whatever it is. They need to be kind. They need to be on time. They need to be sharp. They need to be getting their job done. They need to be out of here by this, whatever it would be for you. This, you know, for us a lot, it's just a whole slew of decisions all day long and positions we go in. Instead of saying all this, right, where I have all these expectations, I've written the script, everybody's got to play their parts, I say, I am going to say this is the way this person is. This is the way the situation is, the way this day is. This is the way all this is going, and I'm going to stop trying to change all of this, this person, these people especially, and adjust my heart accordingly. I'm going to do that, and I'm going to be a different person around this situation rather than let it take me down a dark road. I will be the one who transforms first, and that's okay. Matter of fact, it's a great thing. And I'm just going to give you five examples. This is like my week, our week, and Beth can give you hers, and I don't want to, she wants to, but I was sitting there, we were writing this out, and I thought, my gosh, this stuff happens all the time. And it happened just in the last few days, right? These are five biggies, right? Our handyman, right? I had a written play out. He was in the play. I had written out his part. I did. I wrote it all out exactly how he needed to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
We had a friend of ours who helped us get some lawn mulch ordered, and he completely missed on that. And I had it all written out for him, too, how this was going to work and how we were going to feel by the end of that day. And then these are all great first world problems, Nicole, and we have them. So just putting it out there, this first world stuff, and I'm telling you it's important. And then the third, Beth and I both have punishing exes that we have to deal with, like on an ongoing basis in various ways. So our children. And we have six of them. And so we have lots of opportunities to hear about our exes' BS, right? And then we have Beth's mom moving out here. And we're doing all this work to put her into this place called Arietta. It's beautiful. It's awesome. Arietta means melody and song and a great marketing, except they don't live it. And so here we go. We go, all right, we got to get that done. And this person that's our point person blew a flooring deal, right? I had it written out that she was going to have a perfect flooring scenario for this place, right? I had it all written out for that phone call, and she totally messed it up, right? And then a person that got onto our website and DM'd me, Gil Jones, awesome guy. I really love people. I'm the lover and not a fighter. No. Called me a PC, you know what, POS. So this is just the last few days, Nicole. like this was the easiest thing to write. Because my script was not adhered to by the world.
By the masses.
I had the masses. Nicole, if people only did things my way, we would have world peace.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be wearing tie-dyed shirts, sitting around campfires, holding hands, and experiencing Woodstock 2. It would be amazing. I have it all set up. I just want you to know. I have a script. Your listeners would love it. Matter of fact, if they want to check in with me, I will let them know the part they are to play.
Yeah, right.
A theater of the mind.
Yeah, that's right.
And I have it. I have it. And I'm just gonna offer this out there, Nicole. I have a feeling your listeners have this too.
Oh dear.
I do. And I just have a feeling.
Well, we all focus on what's going wrong, and it's all about us. Like you're saying, you know, you're writing the script. I got a part for everybody. Obviously, you're kidding, but it's so true that it makes it funny. Because, yeah, it's all about us and how our day is supposed to go. Yeah. And then you throw God in there, too. You're going to get mad at God because your day didn't go perfectly. I mean, I hear that one all the time. Not from you, but, yeah, I mean.
I know.
No, but, you know, seriously, yeah. Yeah, it's about me and my comfort. Thank you very much. Right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah,
that's true.
I have a warm, cozy life I've written out. And so, you know, the play is on, right? Yeah. I wake up, ding, alarm goes off, and here's the way it's going to go. And so I just think something that happened, and again, I know I talked about Beth a lot because I really respect her in this way, but man, I was going off on one of these people in my play, you know?
Yeah, just to me, not.
Yeah, no, not to anybody else. Just my close friends and the neighbors. I'm just kidding. No, I was just, but if they would give me a chance, I would let them know what I'm thinking. What?
No, you would.
Well, you know. Anyway, okay, I wouldn't. That's true. I'm gaining immaturity. So immaturity. So anyway, so we were in the kitchen. I was going off on somebody in my play that wasn't playing their part, and they weren't putting the right words or deeds in there. Words and deeds are important in my play, Nicole. And so anyway, I was doing that. Just everything. This guy does this. Oh, man, you know, because I live in the world of expectations, and I'm learning about this. So, you know, Beth just looked at me and she's like, I love it. She goes, has this person ever played this part you've written for them? I'm phrasing this the way I heard it. Has this person ever played the parts, ever said the words and done the deeds that you've ever written for them? Like, have they done that? Have they exhibited these qualities ever in your life as you've seen them? And the answer was, no, they haven't. And so Beth just goes, so when are you going to surrender and accept that?
See him for who he is.
And see him for who he really is. And then see, and I love this part, see the beauty in this guy. Because he has a lot of it. You know, he just wasn't doing what I wanted him to do in the timing that I needed it to happen. He wasn't getting back to me, right? These are things, this daily stuff that happens, right? These first world problems. And, man, I was just weird. So, anyway, all I have to say is, Beth just said, hey, time out. Come back into this. And really, here's the reality of it. And it was like, okay, I need to make two decisions. One, I'll make the decision that I can't control another person, only myself. And two, that's the law of expectation, right? I'm going to law that anytime you put expectations on people, you're just dialing yourself up for disappointment and anger.
Yes.
So it's like, okay, you know who they really are. And then I will make the decision to focus on what is going right rather than wrong. And this is super important, okay? So I'm going to make sure then I'm going to look at this person and I'm going to see the right things about them and what they do. And say, this is really important because it becomes a gratitude list.
Yeah.
So you've got the law of expectation and the law of gratitude. These are the decisions we need to make under those auspices, right? I'm going to say, under the law of expectation, this person is the way they are, and I have chosen to do life with them. And if I choose to do life with them, then in the script, it needs to leave a whole lot of room for grace and a whole lot of room for lower expectations and a whole lot of room for what is real, the reality of the situation. Beth goes, has this person ever said the words you've written and done the deeds that you have laid out for them in perfect ways that never inconvenience you? And the answer to that is, hells to the no. No. Okay then, Jonesy.
And they aren't going to.
Yeah, they're not gonna. So you need to change your script.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on you. And I tell you, I'm not kidding when I say this. It was like she just took a scissors and cut a brutal thread where my heart just got free. It was like, Oh, that's right. You know? That's right. And my heart was being strangled. I mean, it's just my soul was being strangled by these expectations I'd laid on this guy. And not only him, my ex, you know, this friend who blew our mulch deal, the lady down at Arietta who blew the flooring, you know, the person who got her, and didn't tell me what an awesome person I was and instead went the other way with that. That cord got cut that was strangling my soul. And I'm just going to say, okay, I think a lot of your listeners are probably have strangled souls right now. And at some level, at some point, you want to cut that or not and let your heart live free. So your soul is living in freedom and that it can love and be gentle and be really who you really are, really who you're really made to be. Because God's got you in that. He's got a great design for you, and he didn't make you to have to go through this life and have your soul be strangled by these expectations you have and really this piece of you that says, I'm going to focus on what's wrong rather than what's right, and therefore I don't have a gratitude piece to my heart. So those two things changed for me in 1 second.
Wow.
1 second. In 1 second. This isn't a long surgery. For, you know, days on end with these people. Every one of those five expectations I had of those people that weren't playing by my script, that scissor cut that cord that was strangling my heart. And I'm telling you, I started living in a place of freedom and love and joy. I mean that. It was 1 second. 1 second. Now, here's the deal. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to be presented with this problem again, right? It doesn't mean that, okay, that cord got cut, and therefore that cord's just laying there waiting to come back and strangle your soul. It's not, you know, you say this all day. This is a daily thing. This is a moment-by-moment thing. It might be 10 times today, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were going to say
yeah.
That.
Well, no, and I mean, I think that, you know, like we were talking about earlier, I apologize that this is the truth, but everything goes back to how you were raised.
Yeah.
Not just for you, Gil, for all of us. Everything, the core of who we are, our beliefs, our constructs, how we see the world is age 5 and under, no matter who you are. That is when that is cemented. Now, it doesn't mean it can't change, because if it couldn't change, I would have no job. So we know it's changeable. But yeah, that is that automatic programming is set. And for you, you know, and a lot of people, our culture is very into blame. Our culture is very into blame. One side or the other of politics, any issue, it's blame. Okay? It is you're wrong, I'm right, blaming you. If you only change, then I'd be happy. Okay? I mean, that's our culture. It's really sad. It's quite pathetic. And this is the anti-Hakma again. But everything is about blame. And your family is the perfect microcosm of that. You know, your family, you were brought up in a home of blame and shame. Well, and like you were saying, right? You're just sitting there at the table as a kid going, okay, my dad's going off and blaming everybody. Please don't let it be me tonight. Please don't let it be me. Okay? That is a scared child. Okay? What is this?
But there's also a skill in that, though.
Yeah.
That you have to develop, at least for me, right?
So
I don't know the kind
of
table your listeners grew up in.
Well,
but when that started happening, when I knew right away, like, oh, crap, like, here's the judgment, right? That coach sucks. Why he didn't play my brother? He didn't start me. Your teacher is a blowhard. Our neighbors, whatever it would be, it was like, man, it was like set up the bowling pin, knock it down.
Yep.
Set up the next bowling, knock it down. And I sat over and I went, the only way I know I'm not to be the next bowling pin was to jump in. It was like, oh. I got to start throwing my bowling pins up. Because that way the crosshairs of that whole thing are not on me.
That's right.
Right?
No,
and so then, yeah, so I have a...
No, you join in as self-protection. Yeah, you join in as self-protection, and then that becomes part of your programming. And then when you're stressed out, you go back to that. You know, when we're stressed, we go back to that lowest common denominator programming, which wasn't so pretty. But we did it because we needed to survive through something, and that's the, you know, and that's what we unconsciously chose to survive. So, you know, that's our culture. So a lot of us have this. I mean, I was fortunate because my grandfather was the kindest man I've ever met, and I saw him all the time.
And
so he set the most beautiful example of non-judgment that I've ever seen. But most people didn't have somebody like that. So we are a judging culture. And we judge also, like you said, in order to get the crosshairs off of us. And when we don't feel good about ourselves, boy, then we really start judging other people. Because I don't want you looking at me because I haven't dealt with my crap. So I'm just going to judge somebody else. I mean, that's what we do with all of our, that's all of what our media is. So, yeah. But I love this, the way of decision, law of expectation. I will make the decision that I can't control another individual, only myself, and gratitude. I'll make the decision to focus on what is going right rather than what is going wrong. And that changes everything.
All of it. It does. It changes it all.
I heard one time from a spiritual teacher, and I love this. He said, complaint is saying to the world, God, I don't like my life. What you've given me is crap. Okay. That's what complaint is. Yeah. They're saying, okay. Divine. To the divine. To the creator. Yep. My life sucks. You didn't give me what I wanted. I mean, that's what complaint is.
That's right. Exactly what it is.
Yeah. And the opposite is focus on what's right, and then you can go from there.
Yeah. And I think this is really, really important. For all of us, right? I mean,
everybody is judgmental of people.
Yeah, it's.
I am too.
It's just.
I'm judgmental of lazy people. I think I said that last time. But I love working, but I'm judgmental of someone that sits around too much. You know, that's my thing. I have to work on that. What's wrong with all of you? Like, I mean, I'll say it, but I think that's not good.
What's wrong? Yeah.
Oh yeah. What's wrong with you? Got a broken leg? I'm just kidding. No, but I mean, we all have things, and it's based on our own pain, you know, but we all have things we judge people about, and it's based on our own pain. And then, again, we bring in that objective observer, and we've got to look at that within ourselves and what that's about. But I love that way of making that decision, the expectations and the gratitude, getting rid of those expectations. Just work on yourself, and then the gratitude for it. Just focus on what's right, and... Yeah, that's really powerful. I like that a lot.
Yeah. So, Nicole, we don't have a lot of time left here. So I just didn't know if there's anything you want us to answer if there's any emails or questions on that. Just want to make sure we're not missing something.
Well, I just wanted to pipe in with my two cents. You know, like, it's so entrenched, this stuff. And,
yeah.
I mean, I've been running this network. We're in the 26th year starting January, which is now.
Wow.
And, wow. You know, we're still having conversations that they're going through different layers, but it's the same thing as still facing this crap that's so ingrained in us and deeply programmed,
yeah.
You know? And it's always a conscious choice. And you were mentioning about the judgment too earlier. You know, when I met someone early on, like in the first couple of years, I didn't know anything about anything. I came out of complete abuse, darkness, blackness. I had no experience with any of the positive side of life. And so I had to learn, listen, you know, to the guidance and learn as I went. And I remember early on, someone said to me, "Wow, you're a lot more negative than I thought you'd be for running positive news newspaper." And I was like, "Oh, hell, I'm doing amazing. You should have seen me before." So I was quite open about it. But, you know, it's all relative.
Well, and that's like you were saying too, Nicole. Yeah, I mean, it's really important to be real. I remember.
Yeah.
I've been, you know, training people for 22 years now, in the work that I do, the healing work. And, you know, someone back in the day, and this was years ago, and, you know, honestly, I mean, bless your heart, seriously. But yeah, she said to me once, she said, "Well, why do you tell clients like that, you know, you've got issues in your life? You shouldn't do that. They're not going to call you anymore." And I said, "You know, I beg to differ." I said, I am a real person. And I've gone through a lot of crap in my life and darkness and quote, you know, very poor health and massive illness and, you know, bad relationships, done all that too, you know, anorexia, you know, the list goes on. And I share that with people because I want to be real. I don't want to, yeah, like, you know, like you were saying, Nicole. No, I mean, you don't want to come in here and be like, "Oh, I got all the answers. Just listen to me." No one wants to hear that. Why would they listen?
Oh, I don't think anyone does have all the answers. No one has transcended all the programming. And I'll tell you, the ones that have told me they had did not make it onto the air. I was like,
yeah. That's right. No, and they don't. Yep, those are not lasting relationships. They can't be.
Yeah, it's when people ask, and I get this, and I understand. They look at me and they go, "I don't know how." And they'll go, "How did you have a church of 10,000 people?" You know, and then, "How did you have an inner city church of, you know, almost 5,000 people?" And so I've asked people that I've known that were part of those why they came. You know, like, why were they part of that community? Why did they bring all their neighbors? Why did they rush home after services and, you know, call people and say, "You got to come back next, you know, you got to be a part of this thing that's going on." And every time the same answer was, "Because you're real and raw." I think that's really key. That authenticity to be able to say, "This is where I am, and come with me." Not, "I've arrived.
Here's what you have to
catch
do.
Me."
Here's what you have to
yeah,
do.
Catch up. Come on, catch up, people. It's here's where I am. Come with me. And I think when you have that mentality, that real and that raw, people go, "I want in on that. I want in on that." You know, because I'm, you know, as I say, your listeners, my guests, all these things, and we want them to do this, to close this out. We want them to write their, I just gave you our five examples in the last week of where our expectations exceeded reality, and we chose then to focus on the wrong, not the right, and then decided to turn that around.
Mm-hmm.
And so for people yeah, these are my five, you know, up to five. You know, this is what, I mean, somebody would be like, yo, I have 15. Somebody would be like, I don't know where I am, you know, or whatever with that. Maybe, maybe you're, if your life's
maybe
boring.
Maybe 15 a
yeah,
day.
Yeah, you might have 15 a day. You might have none if you're boring. Like, it's like, you know, but I think that that's an important thing to write those down, you know, and then to say, okay, God, help me with these. You know, help me to lower expectations, focus on me, not them, and then focus on what's right, not wrong. And so the law of expectation to lower those and the law of gratitude to really bring those along. And I think the real and raw piece on that is that, you know, come with us, not catch up to us. You know, we've arrived. That's crazy. And by the way, I want to say this. If you're around people like that, that are like, hey, I've arrived, catch up to me. I don't mean this. I mean all love, okay? Drop them.
I did.
Drop them. I'm serious.
I did.
Drop them. And that's loving. And I mean, it's loving because you won't live in this under guilt and shame with that. Like, how come you're not going faster? How come you're not where I am? You know, what's going on? Well, can't believe you're still letting that get you down, right? Those are people that have arrived to catch up. People that say, hey, I'm right in this with you. Come with. As I learn, I want to give that to you too. Be with them. And again, I think that's where people, seriously, I can't tell you how many quote unquote church growth conferences are out there giving people growth skills that don't have deep hearts. And that's really scary to me. You know, I mean, I could write a book on that and, and so we're giving these, you know, so allow your heart to go deeper. And next time we get with you, we want to talk about this way of love. In that way, have your heart deeper in that.
And healing is possible for everyone. It is. It may not look like how you want it to, right? We're talking about the script, or you're talking about, you know, yes, it's true, like drop certain people from your life. I've done that. So have you. Everyone has. Nicole has. Everyone I know has. You have to do that sometimes. But also, you know, I can't help but see because of what I choose to do for a living, I always see the flip side. I always see, okay, yeah, but why is that person that way, right? They're that way because of all this pain. And they can heal. They just have to throw their hat in the ring. Okay? They can heal. Healing is possible. You know, I mean, you're the pastor guy here. I mean, all things are possible. All things are possible with God. They are. That's another way of saying healing is possible.
Yeah.
It is. And that's why we're here, right? I mean, that's why we're here and we share these things, because healing is possible for us and it's possible for everyone else too. And that's a hopeful message. And catching yourself in this stuff. I mean, you're great at sharing things in a really funny way. But, you know, catching ourselves in these things, it is life-changing. It's life-changing because the stuff of life is the daily stuff. You know, that's the stuff of life. It's the daily, the daily grind, the daily things that come up like that.
Yeah, sure are. So, you know, I just want to encourage your listeners in that, you know, like you said, you can do this. You can heal. All things are possible.
Okay.
You know, hang in there. Put yourself on a team of people that are really encouraging. So, Nicole, thank you. We just love that you let us come. And
I love that you show up. Yay. It just works. On that note, we're actually at the top of the hour. Is there any kind of shameless self-promotion you want to get out there before we wrap?
Well, I'm just excited that my company Training for Healing Solutions is coming up at the end of this month for my advanced students and practitioners, and it's an annual training. I just want to put that out there for anyone who's interested in the work that I do at besthealingsolutions.com and some of my other practitioners that are amazing and students that are amazing. So we have our annual training. So, you know, if the work that I love to discuss with you at times throughout our discussions here, you know, resonates with anybody, We do have, you know, a mastery program to teach the skills and the kind of like the diagnostics and the intuition to teach people how to be able to help others. And so I just wanted to share that because our training is coming up starting January 31st.
Yep. Yeah, and I would just say I'm really honored to be a part of that. I just think, you know, in the morning,
mm-hmm.
being able, you know, we've got a bunch of people from all over the world going to be here, you know, some on site and some zooming
Zoom.
In.
Yep.
But, you know, being able to every morning just help people tune their hearts, you know, to be able to be some of the best healers the world has to offer. And I think that that's just really cool. And also I wanted to say, if some of your listeners are dealing with, like, the intricacies of relationships in this, Beth and I did a retreat 3 years ago, right before COVID in Denver, Colorado, and it was called hashtag Why Is Love So Hard?
Yes.
And it's in our shopping cart at besthealingsolutions.com. So if you want to go, you can buy the whole package or you can just buy one at a time for what you need. But we did four parts and over 8 hours of content there for a bunch of just
15 hours.
Was it 15 hours?
Yeah.
So anyway, it's a lot of content. And ultimately,
I loved that.
We found the tapes. We found the tapes. It was a blast. So if you want to jump onto besthealingsolutions.com, and like I said, you can buy the whole thing or just one part at a time and kind of where you are. But each of those is very clearly mapped out. And so Beth and I had a chance to really help a bunch of people in Denver, and it went really, really well. So I want to put that out there, shameless self-promotion, as you say. And,
we love you, Nicole.
Yeah, we do.
Love you, too. And I'm looking forward to next time already. Take care. And, enjoy the ride. We'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Beth and Gil are all linked up at newsforthesoul.com. And we've got to do a quick changeover break. Conscious Parenting is next after this little reset break. Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
The Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
And it's time now for Conscious Parenting, Sandra Keller Jones, and family. Let's bring her on to reintroduce family co-hosts and the show. And what's up for today?
Hello, Nicole. Thank you. Happy New Year.
Yay, Happy New Year.
Hello, and welcome to the Conscious Parenting Show. This is our 9th episode, and I'm thrilled to be here with you today talking about a topic that is near and dear to my heart, parenting in a way that respects and honors our children as intelligent spiritual beings. My name is Sandra Jones Keller, and I love sharing the teachings and practices my husband and I use to raise our teenage daughter. Okay, hold on now. Before we get started, I mentioned this is our 9th episode, which means we've come to you 8 other times with topics that could be life-changing for you and your family. So make sure to check out the archives. Last month, we talked about what happened when my husband and I created unnecessary chaos at my daughter's roller skating party. Hey, we're not perfect. We've also talked about the time when I pinched my 2-year-old because she kept climbing out of the cart at the grocery store. Things definitely didn't go as planned. You won't believe her response. Since this is called the Conscious Parenting Show, we like to put a practical, conscious spin on our conversations. I love what I do as a conscious parenting coach and spiritual energy healer. I've written 3 books to give kids and adults more peace, power, and joy in their lives. intuitive communication with your baby soul, 21 lessons to empower the new age kid, and tips and tricks of parenting a new age kid. My books work together beautifully to gently bring parenting into the 21st century to be more aligned with the wise old souls that are being born today. And with that in mind, I have two workshops to support you on your conscious parenting journey. Passionate Parenting in This New Age, 3 Mistakes Even Conscious Parents Make That Create Power Struggles, Stress, and Anxiety, and How to Avoid Them, and DIY Mindfulness for Teens and Tweens. Both of these virtual workshops are self-guided so that you can do them at your own time and pace that works for you. In Passionate Parenting in This New Age, I share the 3 mistakes I've discovered that have kids push back, making you feel like you're in a tug of war with them. You'll learn tools that you can use to immediately reduce the friction and have more peace, joy, and confidence in your parenting experience. And in DIY Mindfulness for Tweens and Teens, students learn practical mindfulness concepts for everyday life. Topics will help them recognize and manage their emotions and teach the power of their thoughts. They'll also gain tools to help them regulate and ease stress and anxiety. You can go to my website, sandrajoneskeller.com, on the Courses Books page to register for these life-changing classes. Now back to the show. I'm joined by my husband, Thomas, and our 17-year-old daughter, Mecca. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Thomas is a professional artist and sculptor. He did all of the illustration for Tips and Trips of Parenting a New Age Kid and designed 2 of my book covers. He is also the author of The Mirror, 3 Easy Steps to Free Yourself from Fear, Anger, and Anxiety. And that's just the beginning. Mecca is a competitive ice skater and artist. She likes collecting stuffed animals and enjoys embroidering, sewing, and painting. So I'm thrilled that I get to share this experience with my family. So today's topic is, should your child have a goal to participate in sports? I'm going to start by reading the essay, What's Your Endgame?, from my latest book, Tips and Trips of Parenting a New Age Kid, which is a series of endearing and engaging stories about parenting, life, and the lessons we've learned over 15 years. Then my daughter will read her story about the question. If you'd like to follow along, the ebook can be purchased on Amazon, and it's available immediately. That way you can make notes and email or call in your questions. Email your questions to ontheair@telus.net or call us at 646-595-4274. Okay, and this essay, once again, is called What's Your Endgame? I screamed when my 13-year-old daughter landed her axle-toe-loop jump combination during her ice skating competition. I've seen her fall dozens of times while practicing and leapt for joy as if I just received all 10s for performance. In 4 short years, she's gone from skating timidly across the ice to doing axle and double salchow jumps. So, I hadn't really thought about an end game when my friend recounted a conversation she had with another skating mom who insisted there should be a specific purpose or goal in mind. Before Mecca began ice skating, my exposure to the sport was limited to what I saw on television, world champions and Olympians. They were strong and graceful, spinning through the air and nailing jumps that seemed impossible. The reality of ice skating is that millions of kids around the world practice countless hours, endure sprains, fractures, concussions, calluses, and bruises, and you will never know their names or see them on television. Why do they do it? Because they love to skate. My daughter said it's graceful and powerful, and you have to be strong and flexible. I like the constant movement. It's fun. Since we're spending so much time and money on ice skating, shouldn't we have an end game? Isn't the purpose of playing a sport to get into college, become a professional, or go to the Olympics? Otherwise, what's the point? Some wonder. Is having fun and socializing enough? In my opinion, sports are about way more than having fun. They're a core part of our homeschool curriculum. There are life skills that sports teach that are difficult to find elsewhere. I remember Mecca climbing on walls and rocks and shopping carts when she was younger. Some frightened mom would warn, "You shouldn't let her do that. She'll fall." I'd smile pleasantly and say, "Oh, she's okay, thanks." They didn't know my daughter was a budding gymnast with excellent balance, flexibility, and agility. Once, when I dropped my daughter off for gymnastics camp, her coach stopped in her tracks when she saw us. "An athlete carries their own gear," she said, pointing at my heavy load. "That's not your mom's responsibility." Mech and I looked at each other with surprise. "Oh, we didn't know," I said, and promptly handed the gear to my daughter. From that point on, she gladly wielded her heavy backpack with pride. Even though Mecca loved gymnastics and trained regularly for over 6 years, she still moved to Southwest Florida because she didn't want to find a new gym and wanted to take a break. But the discipline and confidence she gained remains with her to this day. My daughter tried soccer, karate, and running before falling in love with ice skating. She only started to skate because I wanted an indoor activity to keep out of the brutal, humid summer heat. Little did we know her past gymnastics training would give her an advantage of strength and balance, and those skills would transfer perfectly to gliding on two sharp blades over rock-hard ice. Any sport can provide valuable life skills. My daughter just happens to be an ice skater. Some benefits of ice skating that this proud mama has witnessed are self-discipline and self-motivation, ability to work through physical soreness to achieve her goals, able to push her body to try new jumps, spins, and complicated footwork, ability to work through frustration when her skating is not going well, learning to speak up when not getting the instructions she needs in class, learning to lose graciously, learning to win graciously, development of friendships, ability to support and encourage others, time management of schoolwork and skating. One of my proudest moments occurred when Mecca asked to compete at a higher level a few short weeks before a competition because she felt she had outgrown her current level. She had to convince her coach she was ready to move up, then learn new moves to new music in order to upgrade her program. She worked tirelessly on her routine and gleamed with delight as she performed the routine she wanted the way she wanted. Participating in sports as a youth creates a lifelong connection to moving the body, which aids in all areas of health, fitness, and well-being. The 50- and 60-year-old guys playing pickup hockey in the arena are the ones who played as kids. My husband competes in 5K runs because he was an athlete growing up, and his synapses are still wired to be physical and active. Will my daughter be the next Michelle Kwan? Who knows? Will she compete in college or perform with a company like Disney on Ice or a cruise ship? Maybe. The future will unfold as it will, but my end game is what's in front of me at this moment, my strong, happy, confident child who's comfortable in her own skin. I think that's more than enough for now. We're live on News for the Soul Radio. Email your questions to ontheair@telus.net or call in to 646-595-4274. Once again, I'm your host, Sandra Jones Keller, and my guests are my husband, Thomas, and our 17-year-old daughter, Mecca. Okay, Mecca, go ahead and read your story.
Okay. Now, this has been a few years ago, so the timeline is a little old. All right. What's Your Endgame? Written by me. I've been figure skating for about 5 years, closer to seven now, and I can't say that I have a set end goal. I don't know if I want to travel the world in skating shows or become a coach, but I know that I enjoy skating and will continue doing it for as long as I can. When I started skating, it was just a fun way to get out of the heat, but I soon realized I wanted to get more serious with it as I learned how fun it was to land jumps and spin in different positions. I began in a group Learn to Skate class where I was taught that eventually I progressed out of the class and into strictly private lessons with my very own coach, Candace. Having a personal coach is necessary when you get to a certain level because as jumps and spins get harder, more instruction and advice is required. Group classes don't provide the individual attention that a personal coach does, but they are great for beginner skaters. I really like having my own coach because she knows my bad habits, skating style, physical limits, and personality, so she is able to help me in any way I need. She choreographs my routine to fit my style and always reminds me to smile and show emotion, which is something I struggle with in performing. Even though I am not the best at expressing my emotions on ice, I still like participating in competitions and shows. I enjoy competing because of the practice and strength it takes to successfully execute multiple rotation jumps, spins, and complex footwork with the judges staring at me, watching my every edge, turn, and landing. Performing in shows is the same, just without nearly as much pressure. I can relax a little more, but I still have to practice to make sure I put on an entertaining and exciting program for the audience. One of my favorite performances was skating to Run, Run, Rudolph by Kelly Clarkson in our annual Christmas show. It was a fun routine, and I painted my nose red and wore antlers. Figure skating is a very demanding sport, both physically and mentally. It takes physical strength, flexibility, and control to improve. That's only part of it. Corrections are often needed in my skating since I'm pretty inconsistent when it comes to landing jumps. Unfortunately, my coach isn't always there to point out what I'm doing wrong, so I've learned how to adjust and correct small issues that may arise. This has led me to be more self-aware and conscious of reoccurring bad habits. I have also learned how to push and challenge myself. There are often jump spins and footwork that I don't like doing or have a hard time with, but they are necessary, so I force myself to do them in practice until I'm happy with them. Another big mental aspect of figure skating is nervousness. I get nervous pretty much any time on the ice in the spotlight, but I have learned to deal with it. I don't really have any techniques to control my nerves besides deep breathing, but after skating for years, I know that I just have to go out there and do my best. Do the best I can despite how I may feel. Overall, figure skating is a great sport to challenge the mind and body, and I know it is good for me because it teaches me self-discipline and awareness as well as forces me to act my when I'm on the ice. Even though I don't have any particular goals in mind, I will continue skating because it makes me stronger and I have fun doing it.
All right. Thanks, Mecca. We're live on News for the Soul Radio. Email your questions to ontheair@telus.net. or call in to 646-595-4274. Once again, I'm your host, Sandra Jones Keller, and my guests are my husband, Thomas, and our 17-year-old daughter, Mecca. And also, feel free to email or call in your questions about other conscious parenting concerns, even if they're not specifically related to today's topic. We're live on the Soul. We're live on the air, News for the Soul Radio. So take advantage of this opportunity to have your questions answered live on the air and to hear the perspective of a teenager, which is rare in this day and age. Okay, so Mecca, so that was written when you were 13. So you've been skating for 8 years now. Do you still enjoy it?
Yeah.
Why? Why do you like skating still?
Pretty much the same reasons that I already said. You know, it's fun to glide on the ice and learn different moves and participate in different skating events and learn like different styles of skating and routines.
And how many hours a week do you practice?
About six. Which is sort of on the low end depending on like what the goal is.
How many hours a week do you see the people in the academy practice, do you know?
They're there from, like, 8 to usually around 2, and then they have the, like, off-ice or ballet or a workout in the gym, so they never stop.
So it's literally a full-time job. So the people that you see at the World Championships and the Olympics and stuff, they're probably, what, practicing maybe 30 to 40 hours a week minimum, you think? So which do you prefer, competitions or shows? And what's the difference? Tell the audience, like, what's the difference between a competition and a show?
Well, a competition, you're getting judged and scored and meticulously graded. And a performance, the audience doesn't know skating, so they're not going to know if you messed up or anything. So performing is usually a lot less stressful because you don't have to do everything right because nobody will know the difference.
So I know that you like shows better, but yet you still compete even though you get really nervous. So how do you push yourself to show up for these competitions given your nerves?
I just do it. I don't know. I don't have anything else to do that is like the same needs the same amount of like mental preparation. Mm-hmm. It's good for me to do them occasionally.
Oh, I like
so that. I can stay sharp.
Oh, I like that. So you can stay sharp. So have you thought about ice skating after high school, like maybe a college team or professional shows, or you don't know yet?
I don't know. I don't really like teams, so we'll see.
Yeah, that seems to run in our family, the whole team thing or group work seems like. And so are you happy with where you're at in ice skating, and why or why not?
Sort of.
What does that mean?
Like, well, I'm working to finish my moves in the field, which nobody knows what that is, unless you know mm-hmm. figure skating. And mm-hmm. I'm working on higher level jumps, but I've been competing in the same level for about 3 years, and it's kind of a lower level. It's the level between, like, lower and upper, so it's the middle ground.
Okay.
And where was I going with this?
Right. Well, the question
I'd
was,
like
are you happy
higher.
With where you're at?
I'd like to be at a higher level. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. And so what does it take for you to be at a higher level?
Motivation, practice, determination, consistency. I lack consistency.
Oh, you do? Hey, say more about that, because I haven't found you to lack consistency. So what does that mean for you? What do you mean?
I'll have certain jumps that I can do, and then sometimes just not do them well or, like, fall. So, or, like, I'll do a routine good one day and then do it very badly the next. So
okay.
The consistency I would need to perform well in a competition while still being nervous.
Mm-hmm. So you haven't quite mastered that yet then?
No.
No. Okay. I've got some more questions for you, but I'm going to go over to Daddy and then we'll come back. So we're live on News for the Soul Radio. Take advantage of this opportunity to have your questions answered live on the air. Feel free to email or call in your questions about other conscious parenting concerns, even if they're not specifically related to today's topic. Email your questions to ontheair@telus.net or call in to 646-595-4274. And so, Thomas, one of the reasons I wanted to do this topic today, at the Christmas show, you asked if I thought we should have pushed Mecca more with ice skating. So what did you mean by that exactly?
Well, what I meant was, did you think, as we look over the history of her ice skating back for a few years, that we literally should have pushed her harder?
But why okay. would you, like, why would you ask that question? Like, what was there for you that you even asked?
Oh, I'm sure it was just a moment of doubt in my own personal parenting philosophy. My philosophy of parenting our daughter Mecca has been that to love and support her completely and to have her create a world so she feels safe in the world, the environment, not just around us.
Mm-hmm.
And I also had the philosophy that I was seeing her as a flower unfolding. I didn't know what kind of flower she would be. I didn't know what colors, how many petals or anything like that, but I didn't want to layer my own unfulfilled childhood desires onto her and push her into a certain thing. So hence, I only required for her homeschooling years that she choose one sport and participate in that, and then she could choose to change and change and change. So I wanted her to come her, whatever was in her soul, whatever was in her consciousness, her path on this lifetime, to unfold from her on out. And so I never pushed her. I just had the mm-hmm. one requirement, pick something.
Okay.
And it was, and then when I asked that question of you, I'm sure I was just having a moment of doubt in my personal parenting philosophy.
And so I think what
I haven't
okay.
But. No, I have an ego too, and I have from time to time had doubts of in every category, I am sure. So I think it was just that.
So actually, I think it was more than that for me. Because when you asked me the question, it was, I think we were watching, I don't know if we were watching other people practice or they were getting ready for the show, and how I heard the question was, if we had pushed her harder, would she be at a higher level? And so that's, I mean, I could be making that up, but that's what I heard you asking in that question in that moment. And you're saying that it was just a moment of doubt, but I took it a little bit further.
Yeah, that's a good point, because all we're ever going to hear is our own personal perception, our own consciousness. So I said one thing, and said it for the reasons I said, you heard something I said, and through your perception, heard something differently, because that's where your consciousness was in the moment. So I'm going to stick with what I said. No, this is conscious parenting. This is, you know, for us to reveal within to each other, to the radio listeners, that communication is a funny thing, and that we're always hearing what we perceive people are saying to us, not necessarily what they are saying.
Okay, that's true. And so why was participating in a sport so important for you regarding our homeschool program?
Oh, because I know from my childhood that playing in sports, I learned a lot of, like Mecca said earlier, a lot of my strengths and a lot of my weaknesses. And she said she learned that she was good at certain things in ice skating and not quite as good at other things like showing emotion. So I found it as a, to go through sports in my childhood as a way of learning about oneself, learning about teams if I'm playing a team sport, learning about friendships and being social outside of a educational intellectual pursuit. And I just found so much value in moving my body as while I was learning or achieving something. And you and I both know that we read a book about allowing children to move physically when they're very young, and learning is very powerful in enabling them to learn faster and retain more.
Definitely. Nicole, I'm just going to check in with you. Do we have any calls or emails?
We've got a very glitchy switchboard this hour, so we're being very careful when we're pushing the buttons. And
okay.
So just email questions just to be safe. Okay. So we've got Terry in New York. They are concerned about their son. They've tried to get him into a variety of sports. He resonated with nothing. All he wants to do is play video games and text on his phone. Their reaction has been to try to force him to do stuff, but that's just creating more pushback. So can you suggest anything for them?
Does it say how old their son is?
Oh, yes, it does. Sorry, 13.
You
know, I hear that from parents, and then I'll kind of throw in my two cents, and then Thomas, I'm sure you'll have some things. You know, we've become a very sedentary society in a way where I think technology is wonderful on one hand, but it also can be destructive on the other. Where I've heard this before, where kids are only interested in playing video games. And one thing that I would say is, you know, Thomas and I are also very active. So we're not just talking to Mecca about physical movement. We're actually modeling it. You know, I walk probably 3 to 4 times a week. We bike together a couple times a week. He goes to the gym regularly. I go to the gym. I do exercise. We go hiking and swimming. And so we are participating in life. So I think it's kind of difficult if you're sitting there telling your kids that they should be active and moving and you're not doing that. So I don't know if the parents are active at all. But that is one thing that I've seen where, you know, we're not modeling the behavior that we would like our kids to exhibit. Thomas, what are your thoughts on that?
I have to be honest. I don't really have any thoughts because I don't have enough information. Like you said, you don't know if the parents are active or not active. Universal law would say is that if my child just does what she wants to do, where do I have that same attitude within myself? Well, I'm just going to do whatever I want to do. And that would just be the mirror, the reflection that my child was showing to me.
Okay. And if Terry in New York wants to provide more information, we're available, Nicole. So
okay,
thank you,
great.
Thank you, Terry in New York, and I hope that helps some. And you
just
said,
let me ask
Mecca. Okay, go ahead. You said, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Which
ask
one?
Mecca?
Did you want
Thomas,
me to ask
what were
the
you
next question?
Ask another
Mecca,
question,
have,
please.
Okay.
So hold on. Mecca, did you have any thoughts about that?
No.
Okay. Then,
all
Nicole,
right.
Another question.
Okay. Well, one of your lines just dropped, and you're not going to be able to get back on. Who's not on?
Uh-oh.
I'm on.
Oh. Okay.
Mecca, are you here?
No, she's
Mecca.
Her line got dropped.
She can't call back in?
No, we're like I said, we've got a glitchy switchboard. That's why we can't take any callers.
Okay.
Well,
I can tell her to come over here then.
Yeah, there
okay,
you go.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, that's handy. Perfect. Okay. So we have Diane in Colorado, and she had a daughter who's 14, wanted to do a drama performance. And so mm-hmm. she was supporting her with the classes and whatnot. And the day of performance came, and just when they were coming out on stage, they had crippling stage fright, which they then angrily blamed the mum for. So one of you can answer that.
And so what's the question, though? Her child had crippling stage fright, but what's the question?
How to deal with the stage fright and the fact that it got turned into anger against the parent for bringing them.
Okay, well, Mecca, you can come help with this because you get extremely, it's not stage fright, but you get competition
it's
anxiety.
It's stage
so how
fright
do you
in
deal
a competition.
Say that again? I don't. But that's not true because you get up there and you do your routine. Like one time, you don't breathe half the time.
Yes,
but
I've almost thrown up multiple times. You know, I don't breathe, so then I get nauseous, and then I almost feel like throwing up during the performance. I guess breathing and maybe like listening to music before or like running through what you're supposed to do, that will sometimes help. Or just like go sit in a corner and not talk to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, calm yourself and orient yourself. That also might work for you, to your child. I missed the question.
Well, the question was
Diane in Colorado, her daughter.
Diane in Colorado, her daughter gets crippling stage fright and was unable to go on, and then that turned into anger and blame toward the parent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think Mecca did an excellent job with the
stage
fright because for her competitions and, you know, we've had to, you know, talk to her coach because she wasn't breathing out there. And what happens when you don't breathe is, like she said, you get nauseous and I think one time
someone did throw up at a competition.
Yeah, some person threw up, and I got really concerned one time when it was about a half hour after your competition.
No, it was a testing.
It was a half hour later, and we were in the store, and she said her leg was still numb.
Yeah, because I didn't breathe throughout the roughly 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, circulation.
So that's when we had to have a sit down with her coach because that was scary. But in terms of it, you know, turning into anger.
Yeah, like those are great stage tips, but yeah, the anger.
You know, with the anger, you know, what I would do is I have a forgiveness process called Ho'oponopono that I do, and it's something that they can look up online. But Dr. Hugh Lin has an ancient Hawaii forgiveness technique which literally diffuses the energy and begins to create a space of clarity and peace. And the four steps to that are, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you, thank you. And it's something, it's like a mantra. I say it as a mantra. I say it internally to myself when there's anything that's happening that disturbs me to start clearing the energy. And then another thing that I do is I ground the space. So if I'm in an environment or if Mecca's upset, I will start grounding the space. And you can ground yourself a number of different ways, but you can, like, see a tree root growing, you know, out of your core area all the way down to the center of Mother Earth. You can grow roots down through the bottom of your feet. You can run waterfalls. So I would use those techniques. But first and foremost, give them water. Like, give them at least 8 ounces of water because that will begin to help them stabilize. And so if you watched any movie where there's anyone upset, the first thing they do is they offer them water because the water actually does work. And so those are my thoughts on diffusing the anger. And then, you know, once Diane, you know, your child has settled down, then you can begin to have conversations. But in the moment, you know, when we're all activated and in our emotional body, it's really hard to be clear. So I would just do my best to diffuse the anger and then go from there. What are your thoughts, Thomas?
I want to say I was just talking to this very thing with a friend at lunch. He and I are both in our 60s. He's a singer, a vocalist, and he had the opportunity of his lifetime to sing at the Philharmonic here in Southwest Florida. And the woman who brought him on stage, what happened was he was so nervous he lost his voice almost a week before the event. And he eked his voice back up a little bit, and he did the performance. But he did it because he experienced that. He went through it because when he did go through it and go on with it, he realized that the worst that could happen was, in the big picture of things, almost nothing. It might have been embarrassing. It might have felt horrible and nervousness at the time. But he decided to go on with it, and he did well, and everybody supported him. And mm-hmm. I think if I can just convey anything to your child, we all have embarrassing moments in our life, and sometimes when those happen, I get very defensive and I strike out verbally at my wife or somebody. And you know what? Even that is okay. That'll dissipate with a little time and a little breathing, and we'll come to realize, well, okay, that was embarrassing, but we got through it, and most likely everybody's still loving and supportive about what happened. And we all go through these trials and tribulations in life, and actually after we're through it, we come out stronger because of it. And I just hope that you give her room or your child room to strike out and learn from that, because sometimes we learn from doing positive, loving things. Sometimes we learn from doing negative and aggressive things, and either way we're learning and becoming more loving with time.
Yeah, and thank you, Thomas. And the grounding, like teaching your daughter how to ground Diane, will just help in any and all situations. And, you know, it may not immediately diffuse the anger, but she'll begin to have tools. And that's why I did the DIY mindfulness course, so that kids can have tools to to begin to manage and own their own emotions and to, you know, learn how to process and move through and get back up on stage or not get back up on stage, but to have some kind of agency over their lives. And so that's the DIY mindfulness course that I did for the teens and tweens. So thank you so much, Diane, for that call, for that question. Nicole, any other questions before we go on?
Not right now. We'll keep monitoring the email for you.
Okay, perfect. And so, Mecca, let's go back to you with a question. So what has participating in a sport taught you that you don't think you would have gotten elsewhere?
I guess, like, self-discipline and, like, how to manage stress, sort of, sometimes. And, like, how to motivate yourself, how to know your limits, how to, as we said, win and lose graciously. I think that's it.
Well, you know, one of the things that I mentioned this in the story that I was most proud of is when you decided that you had outgrown your routine and your level.
Mm-hmm.
And so just talk a little bit about what you had to do, because when you first asked your coach if you could change, what did she say?
No. She's like, no, it's like 3 weeks out. You're not going to do it. You don't have time to prepare. So we'll work on it, like, next competition. So I was like, no, I really want to skate.
It was a very firm no, too.
It's Kansas, so okay. Of course it was. and then I sadly scuffled away, and then I think the next day or a week later.
I think that by the next day.
Within the week, I wrote out what I wanted to say to her. I was like, I want to skate to whatever the song was at this level. Was it a different level?
Was it a different level?
No, did I change the song too?
You changed the song. Yeah, you changed everything.
I changed everything, and I wrote it out as best I could, and I walked up to my coach and I was like, hi, I would really like to skate in the higher level. And I would also like to change my song. I'm positive that I can work to it, and I will do my best even on the short notice.
And what did she end up saying?
She's like, all right, fine, I guess, sure.
And I love that. I mean, you know, I just admire how you push yourself and how you stretch yourself. And I know that wasn't necessarily easy to go back once you received a no, but so what did you get out of being, like, pushing through that no? Like, what did you learn about yourself? What did you see about yourself?
I think I, you know, gained confidence. I gained Candace's respect because nobody wants to defy Candace. It's Candace. And so I presented as much of information and, like, positivity and determination as I could, which showed that I was responsible and taking responsibility for if I did do bad at a competition with a new routine in 3 weeks. So just, like, self-confidence and responsibility and something else.
And you know what? So I think that picture of you and Candace in the book, I think it's from that performance.
I don't remember.
But whatever it was, you ended up nailing that performance.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually one of your stronger ones. Yeah, you did. You nailed it.
I don't remember it.
I do. I just remember that you both you got off the ice and both of you were thrilled.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Thomas, back to you. Which sports did you participate in growing up? And was it by personal choice or pressure?
It wasn't even pressure. It was parental decision. You're going to do this. We started in swimming competitions, as my dad was a swimmer, and we played. I played a little bit of baseball, and just a touch of football. I quickly learned that that's too painful because I'm short and slight, and ended up on the tennis team in high school.
And how did you do on the tennis team?
I did well. I found an environment where I kind of thrived, a sport that fit me physically and personality-wise, and that it worked for me regardless of how well I did in competitions. I felt a lot more at home in tennis. And it was only by trying the other things that I kind of found my home. And, I mean, just like kids, and they find their own group of other kids, we have to sometimes go through different sports or different kids and keep going until we find our personal place.
And as a kid, I started in softball. I played softball in elementary. I think I stopped by middle school. But I bowled most of my life. And I used to be on bowling teams. And we did some traveling. So I bowled. I played softball. And then when I got to high school, I actually tried gymnastics, but was not very good because it's like I didn't have any training. I tried the track team, and of all the things to choose, I actually tried the hurdles, which did not make sense for my height. And then I've always just enjoyed working out, and I never liked running, though, but walking and hiking and swimming and biking and stuff. So I was very active as a kid, and that has translated into actually being very active in my life now. And so talk about how did your participation in sports foster your commitment to health and well-being now?
Well, it's ingrained into my lifestyle. I went from 20 years old or 18 for about 10 years of not doing much athletically. And then I picked it back up. I believe it wouldn't matter how long I had gone. It would have kicked back in at some point, just being active and physically fit. And now in my 60s, it's great to be physically active and fit. And I do know that it just comes with consistency and time. And I wanted to ask Mecca a question. Oh, Mecca, what you learned so far from ice skating, the things you learned about yourself, has any of that, could you say, is transferred to your schoolwork or your friendship or how you just move in the world, things that you discovered about yourself in ice skating? Because you said earlier in ice skating, you were good at some things and not others. You weren't great at expressing emotion, but you were good at footwork or something. Has that made any difference to you in your schoolwork or in any other area of your life? Has it transferred?
I don't really think so because, you know, I don't need to show emotion in that way in everyday life, even though some people complain about it, you know. It's just the way I work.
You know, I would say just your discipline, though. I think that transfers off the ice. You know, your discipline getting your schoolwork done, it does. I mean, you may not think so, but even if
I get schoolwork done is because I'm afraid of failing and I have deadlines.
Well, but still, but you get it done. I mean, the bottom line is no matter how it looks, that by the time the deadline gets here, you get it done. And that's the same with your ice skating. By the time the show or the competition gets here, you're ready.
Mostly, sometimes, yes.
Yeah, well, give yourself some credit. I'm giving you more credit than you're giving yourself. So, Mecca, how do you think parents can best support their kids with the sport? And that kind of goes back to the question earlier from Terry in New York. So how do you think parents can best support their kids with the sport?
Don't force them to do the sport. A lot of parents in ice skating, at least, will, you know, have unfulfilled desires about their life, and then they'll push them onto their kids, and then you get a kid who hates the sport, even though they might have liked the sport if it wasn't for the parent making them do the sport, and then that's not good for either party. Also, if they don't like the sport, just let them try another sport or have them take a break, you know. Maybe they just need to take some time off, and then when they come back, they'll feel a lot better. They'll feel ready to move on and progress and compete or whatever the sport entails.
So earlier I talked about a question that Daddy had asked me if he thought we should have pushed you more. Do you feel like we should have pushed you more, or do you feel like we pushed you, or did you feel like you were just supported, or what are your thoughts about that?
I mean, I don't feel like you pushed me. I feel supported. Yeah.
Supported?
Yeah, yeah.
Should we have pushed you more, though? You think so?
It shows. Candace has talked about it a lot. She's like, do your parents, you know, discipline you or anything? And I'm like, yeah. Not really. And they're like, yeah. And then she's like, yeah, I can tell, you know. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But in this case, you need discipline. So work for it.
Okay, so then what would that look like from us is if you want to be, I don't know. What would that look like? You know, us standing next to the rink, like watching your every move and giving you instruction? Saying that instead of skating 6 hours a week, you should skate 10. Like, what does that mean, you know?
I don't know.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I mean, we must take responsibility, each one of us, for where we are in our lives, in our ice skating, and everywhere else. We didn't push you. I didn't push you on purpose. As I stated earlier, I wanted to see what would unfold from you, and that includes if you really wanted something, you were going to have to find the inner motivation to go and get it. So it's kind of a cop out just because your coach, you didn't look like a disciplined child, to say you wish we had disciplined you more or pushed you harder. You see what I'm saying?
Maybe.
If you want something for yourself, you have to find that within yourself. Otherwise, you can always say, well, my parents made me do it. It's just, to me, it's a slight cop-out.
Yeah, but I'm also not a very proactive person when it comes to skating. Sometimes I'll just, like, wait for something to happen, which I've been working on, and
Give me an example of that.
Like,
when you wait for something to happen.
If I'm struggling getting through a program, I won't go running. I'll just do the program again and see if anything changes, even though I'm not working to make any changes besides the ones that have already failed. So sometimes, like, Candace is a good coach because she'll push me. She knows what I need. She knows, like, yelling at me won't help. So she'll just talk to me and be like, if you want this, you have to do this. She'll, you know, lay it out. She'll be honest. So she will tell me what I need to do, because oftentimes I either don't want to do it or just not know what I need to do. So, yeah.
I think this kind of went into a couple of different directions.
I don't know.
Before we go on with this topic, Nicole, do you have any more emails?
We do, but I think we're down to the last 5 minutes, and just because the board's glitchy, that you probably want to stay focused to wrap up and do your close.
Okay, so how many more minutes do I have before I need to start my close?
4 minutes is when we have to end.
Oh, 4 minutes is when we have to end.
Okay.
Yep. All right.
Okay. I just want to say this. I feel like it's been a kind of a messy show this time around, and I want people listening to know that we're working all of this out just like everybody else, and I'm not even pretending to be perfect, but I'm happy to talk it out live on the air, and sometimes be messy, and sometimes sound like brilliance. So. That's all.
And you're right. That is how it's coming across. You're demonstrating how to work through it and, you know, how to make parenting conscious. And it's coming across that way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, because it kind of went into a couple of different directions and to be continued offline, apparently. You know, but you're right, Nicole. It's called the Conscious Parenting Show, and conscious parenting is not about having all the answers. It's not about doing everything right or being perfect. It's about working the stuff out, because each moment is new, each situation is different, each child is different. And so that's just kind of an example of how we start working things out as a family.
And so. Carving a new path, it always gets messy now and then. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
yeah, it's like going on stage and having a bit of a bad performance.
Are you saying the show was a bad performance or what?
No, I'm just saying to me it felt like, for my part, a little bit of a messy performance. And so sometimes it's like that, sometimes it's brilliant. But I embrace it all.
Hallelujah. Okay, well, we've come to the end of our show. And so thank you so much for joining us. Thank you, Thomas and Mecca, for being here with me today and being a little messy on air and working through this stuff. The Conscious Parenting Show is live the second Friday of each month at 6 p.m. Eastern Time here on News for the Soul Radio. Please visit the archives for more enlightening shows and tell all your friends. And remember, my books are available on Amazon. I'll be reading more stories from Tips and Trips of Parenting a New Age Kid. So go ahead and get your copy on Amazon so you can follow along. And let me know if you have a favorite story you'd like me to read and discuss live on the air. For more information about me, visit my website at sandrajoneskeller.com. And just a quick reminder, I have two workshops to support you on your conscious parenting journey. Passionate Parenting in This New Age, Three Mistakes Even Conscious Parents Make That Create Power Struggles, Stress, and Anxiety, and How to Avoid Them, and DIY Mindfulness for Tweens and Teens. Both of these virtual workshops are self-guided so that you can do them at the time and pace that works for you. Go to my website, sandrajoneskeller.com, on the Courses Books page to register for these life-changing classes. Until next time, happy parenting.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.